Performance. Welcome, Kim F. from Aliso Viejo.
Thank you, Kathleen. My name's Kim. I'm an alcoholic. Oh my God, there are a lot of people here. It's a lot easier sitting with my back to you guys, but my sobriety date is July 31st, 1992, so hopefully 4 days, and I don't say if God's willing, because I know he's willing. If I'm willing, I'll be 33 years sober. So having a complete full circle moment tonight. I do have a home group at the Candy Club on Friday mornings, and I do have a sponsor sitting in the front row who I'm current with. She knows what has my heart heavy, and she also knows what I'm really stoked about in life, so I stay current. When Aaron was up here, and I can't look at Aaron, because I'm having a full circle moment, and I think it's my higher power working. My first day of sobriety, I was 12-step by Dr. Paul, and I didn't plan on being 12-step. And I'll get to that later, because Kelly pays me $20 to tell the story every time I show. But I was taken to a meeting at 4:30, and I was taken to a meal, and then they said, what do you want to do now? And I said, I don't want to go home. I was 23, and I was coming off a really long meth run, and I was afraid I'd use. So they took me to another meeting, and they took me to this meeting. And they took me to this meeting, and who was behind the podium was a woman named Cindy Martindale. We called her the princess. And she was at the podium, and she had just left Mission Hospital after having a double mastectomy. And she had just had her second scare with cancer. So I sit here tonight as if it's like 33 years ago, with my best friend being re-diagnosed again. And we did a lot of fun things when Aaron had cancer the first time that I'm not willing to do this time. So I just hope that it's easy and I don't have to walk a Coleman walk and do 60 miles in 3 days again. I had to invest in a shop vac because she was afraid she'd poop her pants in an AA meeting. So I carried a shop vac. And this time we're older, and this time we're just going to do it a lot easier. Right? Yeah. You don't want to carry a shop back. So I came here a couple weeks ago to hear Addie share, and she bared it all with you guys. But she started on a high note. She said, all right, all right, all right. And then she went on this whole tear, and it was just amazing. And I thought about her today. And I was journaling, and what really comes to mind is what I want to share with you from my heart is I'm so honored to stand before you as a sober woman who practices gratitude, who's been taken through the big book, who's been taken through the 12 and 12, who's been taken through the concepts, who knows today that my entire life, everything in my life today is because I'm in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I go and I do anything that I can do, and each day I ask him what I can do for him, so that my light can shine and my life can be of purpose. Happy birthday. I heard your passion. I heard you saying emphatically that you know your life is good today because of this program, and that's what I want my message to tell you. But my story starts in Pensacola, Florida, and I'm born in a naval air base, and my dad's over doing another tour in Vietnam, and my mom's a Michigan socialite, and she doesn't know what the hell she's doing in base housing in Pensacola with no money. One baby that's, I think Jim's probably about 3 years, 6 months when I come on the scene, and now she's got two babies. She's got no maid anymore. Her dad, you know, her dad took very good care of her in Michigan. And my dad's a Chicago boy, and he's over there in Vietnam doing things that he never imagined he'd be doing either. So neither one of them are equipped to be married, and they have two children. And he comes home on a leave, and she's gotten hands on a little marijuana cigarette. And so she goes, honey, honey, you can relax, because he's so uptight all the time. And she shows it to him, and he slams all the shutters closed, and he says, you are married to an officer, and you're not going to behave like this. Well, she's one of us, and that's not going to go very well, right? So she says, you better transfer out to Pendleton or El Toro because I want to live in California. I'm not going to be broke and living with tarantulas in Florida. So out we come here. And you guys, I ate dinner with Aaron at Baja Fish Tacos, my favorite restaurant in the world. And we drove here and we stopped at La Plata, the light. And I looked over and there's a child time babysitter right there. But in 1971, when I went there, it was a Gerber baby center. So when I talk about a full circle and I talk about a small pool, like, I'm right here, Like, I'm within 5 miles of where I was brought to in 1971 from Florida. All my damage is here. All my exes live here. Every store I've ever been arrested is within 10 miles of us. Every time I've ever been pulled over for a DUI or a possession, it's all the same police officers that are over at Ted's place right now having some biscuits and gravy. So, you know, a lot of people do geographic, so they get to go to rehab. I'm a little jealous because, you know, the judge that arrested me my last time sat on the board until recently. When he retired, I felt a little better because, you know, I'm no longer a known convict. But we came out here, and her next move in that strategic exit strategy was to get the house in Laguna Niguel and then get rid of the husband. So in 1974, my mom became a single mom, and my life took off in a trajectory that I can't make up for you. It's like Macaulay Culkin left at home alone, but there's piles of cocaine, pyramid parties, pony kegs, all kinds of men coming and going. And when they're not having sex with her, they're trying to have sex with me. And life just goes complete bonkers. I go from being a colonel's daughter to I don't know what, but everyone in our neighborhood called my mom, mom, because she let us smoke pot, drink California coolers, Bartles and James. I'm aging myself, I know, but those were drinks in the 80s. So, Zima came after I got sober. But that's the kind of childhood that I had. There was very little discipline. There was very little oversight. The first time I get drunk, I think I'm 7. And my brother goes, go get all the adults' drinks and put them in this pitcher. So I ran around and I poured all the mixed alcohol. And then he grabbed a Minute Maid fruit punch and we went upstairs into a bedroom and we drank this mix and we chased it with Minute Maid fruit punch. And I remember going down the banister into the adults, and I was pretty and I wasn't shy and I was an extrovert. And I was no longer an introvert and I had a really good time entertaining everybody. And I realized that I could get attention. Drunk girls could get a lot of attention. And so we'll just fast forward from 8 to 18 with that story, okay? I'm trying not to be a lesbian. I've got feelings for girls. I'm looking at the softball team, not the baseball team. And I could tell you a really funny joke that Kelly just told me, but I won't. Anyway. And so I decide that I'm on a mission, and I am going to find the right man. And I'm going to find the right man that's going to make me not think about women. And so I just go on this tear all the way through junior high and high school and into Saddleback College. And I'm just a serial monogamous. And I'm going to find the right guy that's got the right balance. I don't know, feminine, masculine. I don't know what I'm looking for. But I have endless relationships and dating. And it's just drama. And it's all filled with alcohol and drugs and credit card debt. And it's just insanity. My mom left for a job in Boston. It was a multi-level marketing. And I was 13, and she would send grocery money to the next door neighbor. Her name was Jan. And Jan had a few issues of her own. So I think I only saw about a 50% cut of that grocery money. And that's when the shoplifting, and that's when some of the stuff, and I became an entrepreneur. I knew that if I went to Kmart and I stole 2 boxes of Pop Rocks, that my cost of goods was zero, and I went down to Pines Park and I sold them for a quarter each. My profit was 25% margins. I was in business. I could maybe make enough to go over to Original Sam's Pizza and get a pitcher, right, and a pizza. Or I could go to the Chinese restaurant and get a lunch special and the Sakis. And my brother and I figured out how to forge her signature because she was gone, and we got fake IDs. We were hustling, and I hustled, and I hustled, and I hustled. And I look back now in inventory, and I look at what our book tells us about like our instincts, our survival instincts, and the things that we had and how they get grossly out of proportion, and that you're doing these things. And I look back now and I want to give her a high five. I want to give that little girl a high five. She was doing what she needed to do to figure out a system and to figure out a way to try and stay safe in a world that really didn't feel safe. You know you're not safe when mom's boyfriend, when mom passes out and men come in your room and you're 7 or you're 8 or you're 9 or you're 12. At 12, my brother got kicked out of the house because he actually beat up someone that was coming into my room instead of my mom's room. So my dad was flown out, and there was a conference, and he got moved in with a man named Mark Allen. And if I ever find Mark Allen, he was a Marine that lived down in San Clemente. If your name's Mark Allen and you're a Black Marine, please come see me. He got my brother out of the situation because when my mom tried to stop my brother accidentally, in his fit of rage, trying to protect me, hit her. And my dad kicked him out of the house because he hit my mom. And so my brother went off and he joined the Marine Corps and left me home with it. My mom's disease was in full swing. And I was in those teenage years. Anybody in here a parent of a teenage girl? Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That was me. And me and my mom, we fought like cats and dogs. And I don't know if we were going to survive it, but my higher power decided to give my mom the gift of desperation at 17. Maya was 17, and she went and she found Al-Anon. And in Al-Anon, they lovingly told my mom she needed a 12-step program, but maybe not the lowest program. Maybe she needed to go over and work on the Bill program. And they saw her for what she was. And my mom ended up getting sober when I was 17, and she tried to start parenting me. And when you've been left alone since 7 to 17, that's not going to really work. So I moved out. And I moved out and I had a job at Bank of America. I was your girl in my little Charlotte Russe little mini skirts with matching blazer and my high heels. And I was taking your money. And I was all about, acting like I was a good girl during the day and then going out and partying like crazy. I was a weekend warrior. My boyfriend worked at a security company. Westex Security off Lake Forest, and we started using things that kept us awake on Thursdays, and we'd start coming down around Sunday, and then we'd start, with just maintenance during the week, and that went on from 17 to 22. And I didn't realize during that time and that time period how isolated I got. There was nothing in my life except working and using. And working and using. And when he started to get on me about my using, I broke up with him. So my last 2 years of working and using are 100% isolated. I don't hang out with any of my high school friends anymore. I'm not seeing my brother. I'm not seeing my mom because she's over there with those AA people, and they're all just too damn happy. And my holidays, when I would see my mom for the last 5 years of my drinking and using, were spent with all of you at the Canyon Club. Do you know how horrible that is when you're using and you're standing in line with your paper plate and you're like shaking and you gotta wait and you're listening to Father Terry and Patty O every year on Christmas and Thanksgiving and you're on like meth and Patty O's like, one of me and three of them and I think I'll take them and one of me and three of them. I'm like in hell. But my mom decided that she was sober and she wanted to be with people in the Canyon Club and she didn't want to cook anymore. So that's what I had to do while using for 5 years. So I had a commitment in my mind that I didn't want to end up to be one of you, just like Aaron shared about from the podium. I didn't want to end up like my mom. I didn't want to end up in AA with these people laughing about really weird things. But every time I came to AA, you guys were so nice to me. You gave me cigarettes. You bought me sodas. You guys fed me. It was great. But anyways, I want to get to the part where it gets really, really good for me, which is I didn't know then that I had no idea who I was or what I was doing. I didn't know then that I was just an anxious, nerve-ending, just I was like a heat-seeking missile, just looking for attention and looking for protection and trying to figure it out. And no one has ever told me anything. So here I am, and I'm 23 years old, and I owe $30,000 to a Visa and $20,000 to a MasterCard, and I have an Amex card, and I'm doing cash advances, and I'm robbing Peter to pay Paul. When this one's due, I take an advance here. And all I'm doing is the little net game. I'm just shuffling balances. And I live in an apartment in Lake Forest, and it's a two-bedroom apartment, and there's six of us that are living there. I have a bedroom and a bathroom and a Cocker Spaniel. And we were, had one roommate. Her name was Joy Lynn. She had a bedroom and a bathroom across the hallway. Her boyfriend moved in with her. And then we all still couldn't make rent, so her brother took over the couch. And we all still couldn't make rent, so we put up a little Chinese partition, like a room divider, and we rented out our dining room to his coworker. So we were all living in a two-bedroom apartment, and this was life because none of us had any money and none of us knew what we were doing. And I woke up one morning, and it was no different than any other morning I came to. I was still that night. I decided to drink at the Cowboy Western Bar up in Anaheim called the Cowboy Boogie. I also frequent the Swallows Inn and the Wagon Wheel. I liked how a man led me on the dance floor. I liked that they liked to buy their ladies drinks. They know how to take care of their women, and I took full advantage of that. And I woke up in Wranglers and Ropers, and I pulled out what I thought maybe could be a couple dollars, and all it was ATM receipts from cash advances. And I got up, and I couldn't find my dog, and I went out to look for my dog, and someone had left our front door open, and she was out on Lake Forest, and she was on the center divider, sniffing. And she was fine, and she hadn't been hit because it was God's grace, right? But I brought her in, and I said, I can't keep living like this. And I started crying and hyperventilating, and I called my mom. And you guys, my mom had been an Al-Anon and AA for 5 years by the time this phone call came in. I'd probably lied to her, borrowed from her, taken some checks, maybe forged that name again, gone and taken care of some bills with her money. I'd done quite a few things. So when this phone call goes out, it says something like, hey, mom, it's me. I'm not feeling very well. Can you come get me and take me grocery shopping? She said, no, honey, I'm busy. Click. And I was like, oof, wow. I knew I didn't have enough gas money to make it to Dana Point. She lives off Stonehill. She did. And so I called her back and I said, okay, you're busy, but could you just go grab a few things? I'll make a pot of soup for the whole week. I'm in low blood sugar. I need some help. And she said, like I said, babe, I'm busy. Click. And so I was just pacing, and I only had one cigarette left. And I don't know, when you're a nic fiend like I was, you got that one cigarette left. You're working, you're trying your hardest not to light it because you need it. You need it. You know, you don't know when your next one's coming. And I'm pacing and pacing like, fuck it. And I light it. And when I light it, I look up and I'm looking in the mirror, and my eyes are still dilated, and I haven't eaten, and I'm shaky. And what caught my attention was that I was looking at myself, and there was nothing looking back at me. And you guys know that plea, that prayer. And I don't believe in God on this day. And all I say is, I need help. I need help. And I remember going to put my hands on the counter, and I'm looking at myself, and I'm saying to myself, I need help. And my phone rings, and my mom says, I don't have time for grocery shopping today, but I can pick you up on the way to a party. Could you please take a shower? And could you please think about not cussing and not embarrassing me today? I don't know about that. That's a really, really tall order. And I said, deal. I said, deal. I said, when can you be here? I think I'm in trouble. And she said, I'll be there in 30 minutes. Take a shower. And I took a shower. I don't remember driving from Lake Forest to Laguna Beach. I remember parking in a church across the street from the Gucci meeting. And we walked into the neighborhood congregational church. And I remember trying to pick up a paper plate, and I remember that I couldn't. And my mom just handed me, shoo, no class. Saratoga Menthol Light 120s. They're like this long, and they're menthol. And she hands me her cigarettes and an orange soda. And she goes, I think you might want to just sit down for a while before you try and eat. Because she saw me in her car. And I look back now as a mother, and I look back and I think about driving my detoxing kid that's shaking to an AA potluck, and it breaks my heart for the shit I put that woman through, but I was in my disease. I remember having a few sodas and a few cigarettes, and I got my blood sugar up, and I ate, and I ate, and I ate, and I ate, and I ate like I hadn't eaten what in 7 days, because I hadn't eaten in 7 days. And I overheard conversations, and I saw the golden moccasins, and I saw parts of Paul's story about being in a mental sanitarium, and I'm seeing, I'm hearing people. They flew in from across the United States. People are coming in from Europe. There's people everywhere. I'm like, who's this guy? Paul, what the hell? He was in a loony bin. Oh my God. And they like him, you know, and there I go. And I'm done. I've got everything I need. I'm going to go wait by my, I'm going to have eyes on my mom's car. I'm going to go sit out on the curb. And I'm out on the corner of St. Anne's and Glenary. And really nice shoes appear next to me in the gutter. And it's not Yannick. It's not Yannick and his nice shoes. It's a little fuddy-duddy old man. He looks like Elmer Fudd. And he says, hi, my name's Paul. What's your name? I said, my name's Kim. He goes, do you think you're smitten with the disease of alcoholism? I'm like, it's fucking 1992, and we don't use words like smitten. And I was like, oh, sorry, I'm not supposed to cuss today. And he goes, what? I go, I'm not supposed to cuss today. I promised my mom I wouldn't cuss. And he goes, you're young. You're going to need a fighting spirit. You're up against a deadly disease. And I'm like, in my head, disease? I didn't say I had a problem. Come on. My only problem is I ran out of food and money. Like, that's my only problem in life right now is, like, I can't figure out where to get some food and some money. And so he goes on and he asks me, and again, 1992, Laguna Beach. I'm closeted and I'm in complete denial about who I really am, but I have a lot of friends who aren't. And he goes, do you know anybody, honey, that has AIDS? And I said, yeah. He goes, "Do you know anybody that's lost that battle?" And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Do you know anybody that's got cancer?" And I said, "Yeah, I do, my grandpa Jim." And he goes, "Okay." He goes, "If they could just do a few simple things each day to put a terminal disease into remission, do you think that they would do those few simple things?" I go, "Well, when you put it like that, I guess." He goes, "It's the same with alcoholism." He goes, "We have a disease that's telling us we don't have a disease that's trying to kill us, and you don't think you have it." And I'm like, "Yeah, that sums it up." Okay. And then we see this gold lame flash coming across the grass sideways, and she's screaming, "Dr. Paul, Dr. Paul, I'm so sorry. She promised she wouldn't talk to anybody." And he stood up, and I stood up for some reason, and he shook my hand, and he said, "My name's Paul, and I'll be your friend if you decide to go on this journey with us. But I have a lot of guests inside. I better get back in." And the only reason I tell this story, number one, he Venmo'd me $20. Number two is, in his honor, I want to remember his legacy, which is, you walk outside your sobriety circle in your side of the room, and you go and you pull the people in. You go outside the party. You go to the Canyon Club in the middle of the meeting after you've used the restroom to see if anyone's standing out by the smoking area by themselves. Ask them if they're all right. Do they need to talk? Do they want your number? Is there anything you could do? Hey, we're going over to, do people still go to Crumble? We're going to Crumble. Come with us. I hope you don't still go to Crumble. Anyway, but that's why I share his story. So he walks back to his guests, and I'm standing there. The gold flashing lady is standing here, and I see Susie. She owns New Method Wellness. A lot of you guys know her. And she goes, click, click, and the top of a beamer opens. And she's like, "Bye, Di. I'm going to the 4:30 meeting in San Clemente." And I wanted out of Laguna, and I wanted away from the party. And I said, "I'm going with her." And my mom pulled me, and she goes, "If you want to go to a meeting by choice, not on a court card, I've been on and many of those, I want to take you." And Susie had the smarts to say, "Hey, Diane, why don't you let her go with me?" And Patty O talks about that when she said that she sent Pat to go see the men. And I'm really glad that Susie took me to my first meeting. And I'm really glad that I don't remember anything that was shared there. Because I sat in that meeting, and they have the steps ingrained in wood down at the club in San Clemente. And I remember looking at them, and the whole time I'm having an anxiety attack, because I only see alcohol in the first step. And then I see God and God and God and God and God. And I'm like, this isn't going to work for me. This isn't going to work for me. Because don't you know that while all that stuff was happening in my world, there was only one person that gave me safety, and that was my grandma Vi. And you took her from me, dude. You took her when I was 13. You left me in that place, and I blamed him for it. So I didn't think that he and I had a relationship that could work. I didn't think that he could be my hope. I didn't think a God could be my answer. And I'm really glad that we all eat at fine dining establishments like Denny's and Caro's and, you know, Norm's. Always open Norm's. Because we went to eat after that meeting, and they said, "You got real quiet." And for an alcoholic meth addict that's nicked out of her mind on like three packs of menthol cigarettes, quiet isn't what you would expect from me. And I said under my breath, "I thought I had hope for a little while today, but I don't think it'll work." And someone in the booth said, "Why won't it work?" And I said, "Because I don't think that, you know, I can do this God business." And they said, "Well, you don't need to worry about that right now." And I said, "What?" And I go, "We do this one day at a time, and you're not on that step. You're on step one. You're right where you need to be." And they paid for my dinner, and I didn't know what to do. And I said, "What do you want to do?" And they took me to the meeting, and Cindy spoke, and I just sat there and I just cried. And I thought, a woman like her standing up there battling cancer, had her breast removed, and she's telling jokes, and she's sexy, and she dressed like I don't know if those of you who knew her, you never, on a bad day, she looked like she was on the runway. I thought, wow. And I said, "What do we do on Mondays?" And on Mondays, they told me where to go. On Monday night, they told me at Tuesday night, Beach Fire down at Tower 6 in Capo Beach, they had free cheeseburgers. Woo! I still don't have any money. I don't have any food. I'm only 3 days sober, so I'll be there Wednesday night or Tuesday night. Wednesday night, they told me Capo by the Sea. Thursday night, this is where we go. You know, Wednesday night, you know, Capo by the Sea was some fun stuff. I did all my meetings all the time, and I got right in. and people told me, go check out CA. You're dual addicted. You need to do AA, you need to do CA. Okay, so I went to a few of those. I went here and I went there. Hey, you're young, get involved in Icky Pop. I did what anybody told me to do, and I didn't worry about the God stuff yet. I didn't worry about the credit card bills yet. I didn't worry about any of that. I got a sponsor and I started working the steps, and I got into action, not into thinking. I had all kinds of childhood stuff, of course we do, and I didn't know how to catalog it. I didn't want to add another label and go to ACA. I didn't want to go do this. I didn't want, you know, I was just like one thing at a time. And that's what happened for me and for me only. And if you work multiple programs, great. But working over here and doing this meeting in CA or going to Shit Happens with NA and all that, it got all too confusing. So I decided that AA was the grandfather of all programs, and I was just going to devote all my time and energy and attention here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I say I'm an alcoholic, it means in liquid form, in powder form, in pill form, in whatever form it came in. If I could smoke it, choke it, whatever I could do to it, I would do it. You know what I mean? My drug of choice was more, and I wanted to do anything to not feel my feelings. And I've spent many years in Alcoholics Anonymous doing anything I could to not feel my feelings. And it worked. Because while I thawed out and I stayed busy enough and I got in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, I started to hear people in Alcoholics Anonymous telling stories that I could relate to. Or I would have something. If anyone ever had something on your mind and you go to the AA meeting and it's the topic, you ever just discuss something with your sponsor and you're going to pray about it, and then you go and you hear someone you really respect sitting in a meeting and they're sharing about it, and they also share about what they did to get through it, and then they talk about how they can now offer this gift to other people they're working with, and you're like looking up and you're like, thank you, right? So for me, the magic has happened in Alcoholics Anonymous, listening to other alcoholics and hanging out with other alcoholics. I got to that third step that I didn't think that I could work. And I told you guys I didn't think the program would work. And I still don't want to do business with the God. And I still don't realize that it's me that's walked away from him, by the way. Because I'm so arrogant and I'm so self-centered and I'm so victim-y. Oh, you took my grandma. Oh, really? When I look back now on that whole issue with my grandmother, and I see that she committed suicide, but they didn't want me to know, so they lied to me. And I found it when I was going on a ski retreat with Capo Calvary. I wanted to go skiing with the church group, and I needed a copy of my birth certificate. And in the same file that I found my birth certificate, I found her death certificate, and it said suffocation is cause of death. And my anger and all of that was about people lying to me, right? And it was misplaced. It's at the people who lied to me, not at my higher power, right? Because my higher power didn't lie to me. The people around me did to try to protect me. And that's what happens when we try to protect people from the truth, is we end up hurting them and ourselves. So I get to that third step. I'm in a treehouse in Shorecliffs, Via Cascadita, up on a, with Kim F. She's got more time than me. She's not me. But I did kind of like, my ego really did like that we both were Kim F's. And she was my sponsor. And she said, okay, honey, I know you don't believe. How do you feel about taking the step? And I said, I don't even know why we're doing this. This seems ridiculous. This is fake it till you make it to a whole nother, like, this actually feels like it's wrong. Like, I'm going to fake praying. And she's like, okay. She goes, you don't believe. And I said, I don't believe. She goes, do you believe that I believe? And I said, I believe that you believe. And she goes, okay, would you like to borrow my higher power? And I had that key that we talk about here. All you need is a key of willingness. And I said, I'd like to borrow your higher power for a while. She goes, okay, he's big enough. He can handle both of us. I said, all right. She took my hands and we bowed our heads and we said the third step prayer. And she goes, I'd like you to go home and I'd like you to draw this out, make it beautiful, add a wave, add whatever. I'm artistic. So, okay. So I go home and I draw it out. And she goes, I'd like you to pull it out every day. And I'd like you to get on your knees. And I'd like you to say the third step prayer. And I want you to continue to do that until one day you feel it. I go, you want me to get on my knees? Kelly's shirt, you know, the whole joke he just told me is all about people getting on their knees, but I'm not gonna get on my knees, because just do it for me. And I'm gonna tell you that I didn't think this would work. I would have bet you, well, I didn't have any money or food, I would have bet you anything that this was not gonna work. And I will not forget the day that it worked. It was day 18. And why? Because I was putting little tick marks at the bottom of the page. You know, you do four and then you cross the fifth. and I was tick marking it. And we were on day 18, and I'd just done the three. I'd done the three. And then I said the words out loud. And halfway through, I heard my voice crack. And I hadn't cried in years, you guys. I hadn't cried in so long. And I'm sitting there on my knees. I'm doing a third step prayer, and I just start crying, and something cracks. And this armor that had been put on at 6 or 7 or 8 just started to crack a little. And I called her and I said, I think it's happening. And she goes, what do you think's happening? I said, I don't think I'm really borrowing all yours. I said, I still might need yours to hang out for a while, but I think I'm starting to have a relationship with a higher power of my own. And she goes, beautiful. Write down a list of every attribute you want this higher power to have. All the positives, all the discernment. Write down everything you want this higher power to be. And I'm like, funny, handsome, generous, generous. Many cows on many hills, right? My daddy's got many cows. And then she goes, and I want you to write down all the things you don't want it to be. And I was like, what? And I go, I don't want him ever to take people that I love. I don't want blah, 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 blah. And I showed it to her, and she goes, you just started your fear inventory. Hold on to that for later. And I was like, what? She goes, all that stuff you don't want him to be is all the stuff you're afraid of in life. Punishment, discipline, you know, unforgiving. Blah, blah, blah. It was all there. And it helped me a lot because the fourth step was no joke, right? But I have to tell you something. I can't define it. I can't define it today. I can't tell you anything about that relationship except the more energy and more focus I give it, the more beautiful it gets. I can't tell you male, female. I can't tell you Christian, Buddhist. I can't tell you anything about it. Can't tell you anything. And when I try to understand it, I minimize it. And when I try to share it with you, you look at me like I'm some quack, right? That's knocking on my door with a pamphlet, like trying to bug me right in the middle of Big Brother. I'm like, why do you people always come at the wrong time? And, you know, so that's the thing. It's a personal journey, right? Being current with a sponsor is underestimated in this program. Not keeping secrets. I've had secrets in sobriety that have nearly killed me. I've gotten so dry by not going to meetings because business got busy that I've almost gone insane. I've actually thought about checking myself in before. So I found by going and trying to change the formula that it doesn't work. So I'm just going to keep doing what works, which is just being in the middle, texting and calling friends, showing up, being regular at meetings. Texting when I can't be at a regular meeting, not because I have to text someone and say I'm not going to make it, but because I'm accountable and I'm being courteous. And when you're not at one of our regular meetings, I'm worrying about you. Or when you text late at night, say you want a drink, and then you don't text me back in the morning, you know who you are. I wake up and I'm worried. And I'm like, hi, are you awake? Hi, a sign of life over there, please. It's just about being courteous, because guess what happens here? We end up falling in love with each other. I want for every person in here, whether you identified or you didn't, or whether you took a chip or you didn't tonight, to find a little bit of something that makes you so jazzed that you want to be a part of it. You know what I mean? I want to be a part of this. And I'm not the little dorky kid following the cool kids around school trying to be a part of. That's not what that's about. It's just showing up and going, oh, there's trash on the floor. Let me get a broom. Oh, the chairs need to be stacked. Let me check, you know, stack some chairs. Some commitments are cut out for some people and not for all. I've tried, like GSR is not for me, right? I'm currently holding a position at the Canyon Club. I do not think I should have. If you were there this morning, I apologize. I think I told someone to shut up. While I was chairing a meeting this morning, it will be on my 10th step tonight. But I got to tell you though, those relationships and trying not to be who I am. I live in a world today that is 100% authentic, all the way down to most of you know how much I'm in love with my dog Max, or I will take you hostage if you ask me about my grandchildren. If you dare to ask me about my beautiful daughter, how she's pregnant again right now, 3 months, yes. And her last baby was born late by 6 hours, born on August 1st, not my sorority birthday of July 31st. This next one is due on my natal birthday, which is March 2nd. I told my daughter she can't be late this time because, you know, her birth is all about me. My daughter's 29 years old. She's never seen me drunk. My grandkids know that they're safe with us. You know, our family today has family meetings. We sit down at a table and we have group conscience and we let people talk. And then we say, what about the nays? And we work it out. My daughter used to give me the eye roll that was so hard you'd think she was going to fall out of her chair when I'd say it's time for a family meeting. But I had an Al-Anon sponsor once that said, when you guys are having tough times, you sit down and have family meetings, bring a group conscience, do an informed group conscience. Tell everyone what they're coming to the table to talk about. Give them a 30-minute warning so they could cuss you out in their head or get rid of their anxiety before they get to the table. And when Kathy told me that the first time, I'll never forget, I was wearing little earbuds and I was at Albertsons and she goes, just send a text and say you're having a family meeting at 5 and here's the agenda and ask them if they have anything they want to add to the agenda. I go, I don't care what's on their list. She's like, oh, alcoholic. So it's really, really important that, you know, I am aware that my alcoholism is still alive and well. I try not to be always about me, but I just celebrated 17 years with my wife and she's my best friend. And I'd never had a relationship that lasted more than 12 months before I got to the program. And then what happened when I got to the program is I had 3 4-year relationships in a row. They were all the same relationship with the same issues because I was unwilling to surrender. I was unwilling to surrender. And I kept having the same relationship with a different face. And that's for you guys, the power of these steps. When you're in the 11th step, there's, you know, there's the 3 parts to it, right? There's the prayer, there's the medication. Oh my God. There's no medication in the 11th step, but there's prayer and there's meditation. And then there's an important thing we talked about this morning, which is the self-examination. And when I finally got honest and I finally did an inventory of my relationship patterns, I learned a lesson that has morphed and morphed and morphed, and I want to end on it, which is, it is less about me, more about them, right? And that it does get to bless them, change me, right? And then you graduate. And this is something I've been working on the last 3 years, and Mary's got to remind me all the time, and sometimes she reminds me with a finger wag. But take this into consideration in your thoughts and your prayers and your meditations. There is no them. There is no them. So really, truly take back my projections. Really, truly do my own self-examination. If I'm not feeling like I'm getting enough love, give more love. If I'm not feeling heard, listen. Really, truly, if there is no them and I just go give what I want to get in the world, it comes back tenfold. I'm not there yet. Like, she probably has to visit this with me maybe another 6 or 12 times before I really kind of get it, but there is a mantra within me when I'm trying to make it about someone else or focus on them, where I am now hearing it, there is no them, Kim, go look in the mirror. So to my Eskimo, which was my mother, took me to Dr. Paul at an AA potluck. I hate AA potlucks, by the way, because I have a sugar addiction and I'm like, ah! Yeah. Oh, look at the cake. Yeah, I still don't like it. But that's just me. My mom took me to an AA potluck. She went out of her way, left Dana Point, drove all the way up to Lake Forest, picked up someone detoxing, took them down to Dana Point, or took them down to Laguna Beach. It's spiritual inconvenience. It's going the extra mile. It's being there for people. I always like to thank her. We didn't have a very easy relationship, but in the end, thanks to the steps, we had a very loving relationship, and I was able to be there with her. She waited 6 days without food and without water for my brother to join my side so we could say goodbye together. She transitioned on February 17th at 11:11 p.m., and that's a pretty powerful angel number, and that's what I ended up knowing that she was. She was my AA angel, and I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful that I know this is a family disease. I have members of my family who are living in tents down in Oceanside right now using fentanyl. I have other members of my family who are sober. And so I know that this is just widespread, and it doesn't care how old you are, it doesn't care how much money you have, and doesn't care if you like the boys or the girls, right? The microphone, the speakers, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter which package you like. It doesn't. You all just got that. Yeah, you just got it. Yep. Okay. It doesn't matter who you are. It's going to take you down and it's going to kill you. It has one mission in life, which is to control you and to kill you. And I had no idea that the recipe here for me would become simple, to live in gratitude, to be kind, right? To be of service, to give it all away. The more I give, I don't know how this works, because my fiscal mind, my responsible mind, I'm like, nope, put it in a savings account. And then what I've learned here in my spiritual side, and the true principle is it's a limitless load. You just keep giving it all away, and it just keeps coming back. And I'm really, really grateful to be a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think I still have like 7 minutes left, but it'll all just be bullshit. So thank you for letting me share.